Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built. And we are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network, and you can find more great coverage of all the 14 teams of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, and Spotify helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends. Wherever you found it, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content, you can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Longhorn Republic. Choose an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company. They are a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. Charlie Hustle wants you to be the best dressed fan this season, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all year long. Christmas is just around the corner. Get yourself something nice for yourself or for a friend, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215 at checkout. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who's indiscriminately shaving mullets, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Now that Quinns is gone, I don't know that there's necessarily a mullet that is on the protected list. Any Mississippi mudflap, any Kentucky waterfall, they're all free game, free range. I will give Gundy a little bit of credit in that. That sheen in the Stillwater water, as it poured down on him, his mullet kept pretty astounding shape integrity. I thought it would be much worse, but it really bounced as he walked. The team a little slippery as well, slipped out of a looked like a possible loss there. But really the takeaway was Gundy's hair.
I mean, yeah, Gundy's also preternaturally tan all year. He's an outside runner, which is also just always weird to me. I think he's just trying to blend in with his team-issued gear. So Texas taking on the Oklahoma State Cowboys after all sorts of rigmarole about tiebreakers and who wins what and all of us really wringing our hands about that. It turned out to matter about a hill of beans because the two teams that were sitting atop and in the best position, Texas and Oklahoma State, both won and put themselves in the conference championship game. Squaring off, Texas has a chance to avoid a losing streak against Oklahoma State yet again after losing back-to-back come-from-behind wins against the Cowboys in 2022 and 2021, respectively. So we've got the man, the myth, the legend, Philip Slavin on the podcast today to help us preview the Pokes. We'll do some burnt orange lenses. We'll do some Podstradamus as well. We've got an interesting update for your Podstradamus picks. And then we'll close the show out with some Godzillatron. So we are 3 days away from the Big 12 Championship. That is what we call a callback or a reference for those of you that aren't in the biz. But we're here to preview the Oklahoma State Cowboys. We do these normally in the summer, but if you don't remember, Oklahoma State was not on the regular season schedule for Texas, so we didn't get to do them this year. But in what feels like a bit of serendipity, feels like a bit of the universe or God or whoever you feel like smiling down on us, Texas and Oklahoma State can square off for one last time as Big 12 opponents. And to do that, we have the podfather himself, the man, the myth, the legend, Philip Slavin, the leader of the 1012 Podcast Network, and if you don't know, Oklahoma State faithful, in to help us preview the Pokes. Philip, how you doing tonight?
Always a pleasure to be here. Gerald and Kyle, absolutely a great time. I especially love getting to be a guest on the show and not having to host, because this makes so much, just makes it easier for me. My weight has lifted. I feel lighter and freer and more able to kind of say whatever I want, because the only people who are listening to this are Texas fans and probably a few Oklahoma State fans. And I've already got enough slack from Oklahoma State fans on Twitter who say I'm not a diehard enough fan. Reminds you that I graduated from OU and had spent 2 years in Norman cheering for Oklahoma State while everyone treated me like, you would expect an OU fan to treat an Oklahoma State fan. But I know I'm not going to get any vitriol like that here, and so I'm happy to be here, as always.
You're amongst friends. We've been doing this a long time. It's great every time we have you. The weight is on Gerald and I's shoulders to carry this, and that's honestly terrifying for the past 6 years when we've done that, when we realize we are the adults in the room, but yes, you let it fly. bring that trademark black and orange joy that that we're so familiar with and our listeners are so familiar with.
This time last week, there were all sorts of articles and consternation about what were the Big 12 tiebreakers, right? The Big 12, in its infinite wisdom, I'm going to take some parting shots at the leadership real quick, didn't really have a clean way to adjudicate these tiebreakers. And they were also poorly worded. But anywho, so they released some tiebreaker scenarios. They released some clarifications of tiebreaker scenarios. And after all of the hullabaloo and all of the arguing, none of it mattered because Texas and Oklahoma State won out. Texas absolutely blasting Texas Tech, while Oklahoma State survived a game that they really tried their damnedest to lose against BYU to set up this final matchup between Texas and Oklahoma State. So, Philip, what are the vibes like among the Cowboy faithful with this like last opportunity to kind of thumb in the eye of Texas?
I mean, I think until the tight end's knee landed on the foot of Trey Rucker and the ball landed on the ground for Rucker to jump on in double overtime for Oklahoma State to clinch the win, I think since then it's just been a massive sigh of relief and joy to be here, to have a shot at Arlington and a shot at Texas one last time. And so I think for the most part, I don't even know if people are like worried about the game so much as just excited about it. I mean, we've already seen as of Sunday night, there were students out around Gallagher Iba wrapped around the building late at night waiting so that they could try and get tickets to go to Arlington and go to the game. Some of the football players greeted them out there with the golf cart and the boom box, Ollie Gordon being one of them. And so I think right now everyone's just excited. I mean, to have the season that Oklahoma State has had, the let's call it the funniest 9-3 season absolutely possible for Oklahoma State this year, and to be going to Arlington, it's almost like the pressure's kind of off. Like you could almost call this a little bit of free money for Oklahoma State because you went 9-3, you lost some of the games the way you lost them. You were 8-1 in games that were within one score in the fourth quarter, which allowed you to even be in this, Scott. By the way, 9 games Oklahoma State played where the score was one score in the fourth quarter. That's the most Mike Gundy shit you've ever heard of. It is the I keep saying, I don't know how many times I've referenced this on the 10-12 podcast this season. It's the Jesse Pinkman meme of just going, he can't keep getting away with this. That is Mike Gundy in a nutshell often enough. So I think OSU fans, for the most part, I don't think the like worry about the game has set in. That'll probably show up like Friday, Saturday. But for right now, it's just we got here. Somehow we survived the last 3 weeks well enough to actually get our team to Arlington for a shot at a Big 12 title. And that feels pretty good.
I do love how much Twitter ink was wasted on the, you know, what outcomes could happen. And then after basically you beat OU, the likeliest outcome to happen. But it did happen with some old-fashioned football. We had the hacky six where a player hacky sacked a football up in the air to be returned for a touchdown, and you had the hacky or I guess the foot fumble in overtime. Both were crazy. But look, we know that this is a game with good defenses, but people are going to be watching the offense. So let's start there, right? We know that in an ideal world, this would be Jonathan Brooks versus Ollie Gordon, the two probable, you know, at least two of the three best backs in the Big 12. And I think that makes you two of the probably five best backs in the country right now. But Ollie Gordon is playing. Jonathan Brooks is not. And Ollie Gordon is going to be the focal point of the offense. You know that Texas has an incredible line. We've shut down running backs. I mean, what is the offensive game plan? Is it just feed Gordon and see if you can do something different or Gordon really is him?
I mean, you're going to feed Gordon, and you have to. And this team has won because of two things. Ollie Gordon on offense, and then we'll talk about the defense in a minute. And from an offensive standpoint, like Alan Bowman's done enough for this team. For a guy who's got 10 touchdowns to 11 interceptions, and yet has thrown quite a few yards this season, like he's fine. Like he's fine. You lost a couple of wide receivers. You've had some guys banged up. You've had guys step up like Leon Johnson, who came from D3 George Fox University, and everywhere all like, you spent a scholarship on who? And that guy, I mean, he stepped up. And to credit the receivers, you've still got Brennan Presley, who everyone hates to see, but like the other guys from a receiving standpoint, have stepped up and had to make plays the last 3 weeks because defenses have wisely loaded the box like nobody's business. Like that, like it's the football of olden times. Just shove all your defenders right here at the line of scrimmage and let's see who can push who, and maybe someone will score a field goal or not. But like, OU did it for a bit and it didn't work. And then UCF did it and it very much worked against Ollie Gordon. And then Houston and BYU have done similar things, and OSU's kind of figured out how to scheme around it. But it's all about Ollie Gordon. I mean, look, Oklahoma State scored 5 touchdowns against BYU. And when I say Oklahoma State, I mean Ollie Gordon scored all 5 of Oklahoma State's touchdowns against BYU. And some of those, including the one in the first overtime, where he went to the left as the line was going and there was nothing there, and he ran all the way back right to find get his way in. And as he said, he leapt in the air to avoid stepping on Brennan Presley and got hit by 2 guys and still scored a touchdown. It was very much an impressive play. But like, Oklahoma State's success is entirely on the shoulders of Ollie Gordon. It just is, because we've seen when defenses limit him, Alan Bowman's been a pretty good guy to not make too many mistakes, but he is still making some. And so that's to be expected from a guy who's in his first year in the system, had basically not started a game in what feels like a decade. I forget how long he actually rode the bench at Michigan. I think it was just 2 years. But with this offense, it's about Ollie Gordon. End of story. Like that is the offense. And if you stop him, we saw what happened with UCF. Like part of the reason that game got away from them was UCF can make big plays. Oklahoma State is susceptible to giving them up. And they completely shut down Oklahoma State's run game and what they wanted to do in the run game. And you lost big. So if Texas shuts down Ollie Gordon, it'll be a long day for OSU and a fun day for Texas.
Shutting down Ollie Gordon feels like a tall task for any defense. And I think like that's obviously why we started there in the matchup that I think everyone's going to be watching, right? For Oklahoma State, that's their offense. For Texas, that's really the defense, is the run defense. And so, you know, Mike Gundy had some, they're trying to make him seem like spicy words on Monday, but really it's just kind of Mike Gundy being Mike Gundy. We're just going to line up and block him, right? Like that's what they're going to do. Like, how do you see Gundy, who, you know, is an offensive guy who likes to run the ball, how do you see him trying to attack this Texas defense that has really been lights out on the ground for going on 5 or 6 weeks now?
Well, luckily, I don't think any Oklahoma State offensive linemen have done what an Iowa State offensive lineman did and tried to act like the Texas defensive line isn't good. Good job getting your team to 9 rushing yards. If you're Oklahoma State, like you're gonna have to figure out how to create lanes, and it's gonna be tricky. I'd like to sit here and act like I'm a scheme guy and be like, well, you know, if you bring the tight end into the X position and you bring it, like, I'm not even going to pretend that I'm the scheme guy. That's what we have. Feels Like 45, our Oklahoma State podcast, the network. That's Caden Dustin's job. My job is just talking to a mic. And so, look, I think for Oklahoma State, it's going to be like, you know, Texas is going to do what the last 4 teams have all done, Oklahoma, UCF, Houston, BYU, and say like, okay, we're going to make Alan Bowman beat us. And so, For Oklahoma State, you're going to have to throw the ball to force Texas to not be able to load the box. Because if you tell me Texas comes into this game and doesn't have like 7 guys like right there ready to go, like I would be shocked. Because I think that's the game plan against Oklahoma State. And it's been the most effective early in games, especially. You saw the offense against BYU struggle early in the game. You saw it struggle early against Houston. You saw it struggle the entire game against UCF. Like, Texas is going to play defensively to load the box. And Oklahoma State has figured some things out about how to deal with that, because that's what everyone's been doing for the last 4 weeks. But honestly, it's just going to fall on the offensive line to do their job and try and create holes, which is easier said than done. I mean, like every offensive line in the country, Oklahoma State's is beat up. You lost Jonathan Brooks for the rest of the season. And so, like, it's going to be a tall task. You can scheme all day. If your players can't make the plays, then it doesn't matter how good a schemer you are. So like, I think Oklahoma State knows what defenses are going to do and are going to do their best to scheme around it. To some extent, it's going to fall on the players, the offensive line and the defensive line, to be able to block well enough to give Ollie some options and holes to be able to pick up some yards on the ground.
And it does feel like, you know, Texas has played Tech where they really truly shut an offense down, even with Taj Brooks. But I think Alan Bowman is a pretty significant upgrade from Morton. And I do think the receiving room is more talented, certainly with who's healthy in Oklahoma State than what Tech was able to do. Brennan Presley just feels like he's going to have like a 10 catch game. It just seems inevitable. And I hate it. Like my next Oklahoma State receiver who I'm ready to hate. But how tall is Leon Johnson? Every time I turn on your game, it feels like he's towering over defensive backs.
I believe he is 10 feet tall.
Okay.
But he is 6'5".
Yeah,
so
that's right.
He is tall. 6'5", 207 pounds. Like I said, D3 guy. And really, I mean, you look at the stats, you say, okay, 27 receptions, 446 yards and a touchdown. Like what's the big deal? I mean, this is a guy they were trying to redshirt because again, he came up from Division II.
Right.
And against BYU, 9 catches, 132 yards. Like he, because of his height, I'm gonna say he's been a big part of the receiving passing game, pun intended and intentional. Like he has really stepped up. I mean, honestly, this is a guy where everyone's like, okay, cool, and like they're hoping they can get a medical redshirt, get him back here. They didn't even intend to play him.
Wow.
And because of injuries, he's had to step up, and he has done a fantastic job. I mean, I don't think there's a guy who, a newcomer for Oklahoma State, that has impressed me more than him. Because being called into action, and again, it's not like he came up from FCS or D2. He came up from Division freaking three, George Fox, and is playing like this. Credit to Oklahoma State. It was kind of a what, who, when he got brought on, and credit to him for stepping up and really being a guy. Obviously, Brennan Presley, everyone in the Big 12 knows who Brennan Presley is. Rashad Owens has had some marquee games this season. I tweeted out, I think it was last week, was like, which breakout game from a receiver has been the biggest one, because you had Leon Johnson's breakout and you had a big game from Brennan Presley and you had a big game from Rashad Owens. And so like different guys have had to step up each week. I am really curious. Is it Leon Johnson? Is it Brennan Presley? Is it Rashad Owens? Because it does feel like someone is going to have to step up. Somebody will. It will be very interesting to see who actually does for the singing game.
So let's flip it to the other side and talk about the Oklahoma State defense. Cause I think I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know what to make of the Oklahoma State defense. Like, if I'm being completely honest with you, because there are games where they give up 8 yards a play and win by a touchdown, right? There are games where they give up like 5 yards a play and lose by several touchdowns. And so, like, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, they've shown some ability to stop the run, but they've also had some games where teams have rushed for 300 yards on them. So, like, what is, you know, Texas is now 3 weeks into having three different 100-yard rushers and no sign of slowing down, regardless of who they're handing the ball to. So, like, what does Oklahoma State do defensively, and how can the Nard Dog, their new defensive coordinator, really shore things up for them in, you know, the biggest matchup of the year?
Here's what I'll say is Oklahoma State's biggest problem has been, and it's one of the reasons UCF was able to do to Oklahoma State what they did offensively, has been susceptible to the big play. Very much has been susceptible to big plays, especially early in games. Like, that is when Oklahoma State is defense is at its most vulnerable, is early in the first halves. And because you look back through kind of the wins, right? You go to BYU, right? You're down big to BYU until the second half. And then you kind of shut them down. You held them to 0 points until right at the last drive with 40 seconds, and they marched down the field and kick a 49-something yard field goal, right? But otherwise, you shut them down completely in the second half. You look at the game against Kansas State, like a few more points in the second half, but not a lot. Kansas, they scored 7 points in the second half. West Virginia, like most of what Oklahoma State has been able to do really is that Brian Nardo has done a really good job in games of making halftime adjustments. Like Oklahoma State has been, especially the defense, has been a far better team in the second half of games than the first half of games. I think it's just they're slow to figure things out. But again, first year defensive coordinator who came up from D2 level. You do have if you want to say one season is a lot of experience, fairly inexperienced from that standpoint, defense, because you've had a lot of guys go off the NFL after last year or transfer. And so you had a lot of guys who either were playing as reserves or not playing, have to step up and take in big roles. And so I don't think, to me, like one season under the books and then you go into your next offseason, now we can talk about experienced players. Like in your first year as a starter, it's still your first year. And so I do think it's an inexperienced defense who's shifted schemes to from the 4-2-5 to 3-3-5. And so like there have been growing pains. And so like they'll make adjustments. The other thing for Oklahoma State, and this has been the biggest thing to me defensively from the turnaround, the success they've had, it's forcing turnovers. If you go look through that 5-game win streak before the UCF game, they were +8 in turnovers. And then you lose it 3-4-1 against UCF. And then like, it was kind of 50-50 against BYU. I think they might have won the turnover battle because of the turnover at the end that won the game. But like OSU has been winning games, honest to goodness. If you really want to understand how the season has gone for Oklahoma State, it's OSU doesn't turn the ball over, they turn you over. And Ollie Gordon gets big runs or makes big plays. And if those two things are happening for Oklahoma State, they have been successful this season. Because again, of your 12 games, 9 of them have been one-score games in the fourth quarter. The other 3 that were not one-score games in the fourth quarter, you went 1-2.
So we're going to put your feet a little bit to the fire here, Philip. We're going to say, you know, you've kind of laid out the game flow, right? Texas is a team that's gotten up big on a couple Big 12 opponents with, you know, consecutive K-State, U of H games where they're up big and then, you know, they let a team come back in the second half. That's exactly what you said Oklahoma State does. So maybe it'll be big at half, but Texas fans should not gloat because it seems like the game flow favors Oklahoma State in that case for what they like to do, which is come back furiously. You've said turnovers are key. And Ollie Gordon needs to get some home runs. So let's say maybe all of those things happen, or maybe let's not say, let's let you say it. What do you think is the likeliest outcome? Go ahead and give your prediction for the big one.
The two most likely outcomes for this game is Texas wins by 40 or Oklahoma State wins by 3. I don't see how anything in the middle happens. We had Ari Temkin of Big 12 Radio on the Tintel podcast on Monday to kind of recap the weekend. And he made the perfect point and brought it to my realization is everyone needs to understand that this is Texas's story. And I'm saying this is the Oklahoma State fan, and I'm kind of saying this is the Big 12 podcast host. This has been the Texas revenge tour, and no one really stopped to look and realize it because they have played the classic Big 12 or the Big 12 teams who have gotten them and Southwest Conference schedule. Because you got Houston there, right? You got your TCU, right? You got your Kansas State, you got your Iowa State, you got your Kansas. You got these teams who for the last decade plus, ever since 2010, have given you so many problems. Like you lost to Oklahoma, so that was their revenge game, I guess. But Kansas State, they almost lost it, but they got the win, a game they would have lost the past decade. TCU comes back, but Texas gets the win. A game they probably would have lost most of the time in the last decade. Iowa State shut them down. Blow out Texas Tech, right? This has been the Texas revenge tour. Oklahoma State is, what was the set I looked up? Since 2010, they are, how many years is that? Is it 9-4? Against Texas, if I recall correctly.
Yeah.
That sounds
about
right.
Pretty close to that, yeah.
Oklahoma State's the only team with a 5-game win streak in the city of Austin. Texas has, since TCU joined the Big 12, Texas has never beaten TCU and Oklahoma State in the same season. And Oklahoma State wasn't on the schedule. That was it. Oklahoma State was going to finish this series off with a W that they got last year with a big come-from-behind win, right? Man, isn't everything just kind of coming up? Texas's revenge tour gets to finally cap off, I think, the team that has been the most frustrating for Texas and Oklahoma State ever since 2010, because it's the team they have struggled the most with. Like, it's wild to me that of those 4 Texas wins, I think 3 of them are in Stillwater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it don't make no sense. This feels like the Texas revenge tour, and this feels like Texas is focused. They know it's in front of them. They know they have a shot at the playoff. I think the Texas by 40 is way more likely than the Oklahoma State by 3. Do I think Oklahoma State, like Mike Gundy's going to Mike Gundy some things. And this game will probably be competitive more early than I think, because the game plan is right. Oklahoma State's going to get down. Texas is going to get up. Oklahoma State's going to come back, because that's how this game flow works. I kind of wonder if it's a reverse, if Oklahoma State somehow keeps things close early. Maybe Texas makes some mistakes in this big game because there is all the pressure on Texas. There's no pressure on Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
You're 9-3. You win the title, you get a title. Whoopee. Great. If you're Texas, like you're 11-1. If you win, you should be in the playoff. Like, sorry, unless there's four undefeated teams, like, you should probably be making in the playoff, and they have a legitimate case with the win in Tuscaloosa, which people seem to discount. Also, how funny is it that Texas is right now being treated like a Big 12 team, and the brand ain't carrying the weight it should for them right now, and they aren't in the top four despite the season they're having, and having a win at Alabama, and it's still like, oh, Texas, you might make the playoff. Or we'll just put in one lost Georgia and one lost Alabama over you because yada, yada, yada. Like, where's this brand power that we've been?
It undermines the fallacy of the burn orange media conspiracy that Aggies have been throwing out for years. Finally, it has proven to be an internet hoax.
But if you want my prediction, I mean, I think Texas wins this game. I think they probably win by double digits. I think this has been everything from a statistical standpoint outside of all that Gordon says, this Oklahoma State team is middle of the pack. And yet here we are because it's Mike Gundy and he can't keep getting away with this.
I hope so, Philip, for my sake. It's going to be a terrible weekend if no, I'm just joking. So we'll cap this off as we always do, going with what we've named this year, the meme of changing the name of the segment every year, the Hurry Up Offense, where we ask some just random off the cuff questions to see where we're at. So our first question, I want to know, so early in the season, Oklahoma State lost to South Alabama. And I want to know if that was Mike Gundy just being so patriotic that he threw the game. I want to get your thoughts on that.
USA, USA.
USA. No, I think that was Mike Gundy being a flipping idiot. Honestly, I think that was them treating the non-conference like the preseason. Earmuffs kid dicking around with this whole three quarterback thing and basically just holding everything back for conference play because they didn't really run their offense. And all I got in Gordon got 19 carries in the non-conference. If that's not treating it like preseason, right. I don't know what is.
Maybe you didn't know who your quarterback was or. All right. So we know that a lot of times when we have people on and they're losing a rival with Texas and Oklahoma leaving, but I think truly if you were to poll Oklahoma State fans, I would imagine the two biggest rivals, obviously one certainly being a true, true rivalry in Oklahoma, but a big game nonetheless against Texas. You're losing both of those games. So in the new Big 12 era, and we've gone off to more southeasternly pastures, What is the new rivalry game? What is the game that fans will be circling on their calendar for Oklahoma State?
I have no idea. I hate this answer. It's a lazy answer. And because over the next 4 years you don't play everybody all 4 years, I would say it is the teams you know best.
Mm.
It is Kansas State and Iowa State, because Oklahoma State, Kansas State's typically your games are pretty good. Sure. Oklahoma State, Iowa State's been the most, it's been like, I think the closest series in the Big 12 for the past like decade plus. That is the cardiac cup if ever there was one. and then I think most Oklahoma State fans agree, like there's like a mutual respect, distaste, middle finger, high five with Texas Tech. And so like, we're good with that game. And so I think It's kind of like, we're going to enjoy playing a couple of teams. But there's not one. And since there's not one protected, then it's been confirmed. There's not a rivalry for Oklahoma State. And so I think it's just relying on the teams you know best to be games you look forward to the most.
I like it. So speaking of things that you know the most, we're all millennials, right, of elder variety. And so we cut our teeth on the Tony Hawk Pro Skater games. And so I want to know, is Ollie Naturally. Gordon the lost Tony Hawk Pro Skater side mission, or is there a better game from our pantheon that you think Ollie Gordon would fit?
Uh, get, Given the way Ollie runs, I need to think of a good video. I'm just going to go with Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, I need a game where the whole point of the game is that you're just running and you can't stop. If you stop, you die. That is an Ollie Gordon video game. It is from start to finish. Once you go, it's go. I don't want a racing game. I want a single player run, 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 run. Don't stop. Stop. You're dead. You'll fall down a hole. It doesn't matter. You cannot stop till you reach the finish line.
I like that. I like that. I was very literal with it. I think there was a mission in Tony Hawk where you had to Ollie someone. Don't remember that guy's name. But yes, I like that better. I think Ollie Gordon as Sonic or Knuckles makes some sense. Finally, Philip, we Gerald and I talked about the best Thanksgiving movie, which is way harder than you think. Last week, we're heading into the holidays here quite soon, and so we're going to give you a little bit easier one, or you can choose to stir up a little bit of controversy. What is the best or your favorite Christmas movie?
You can't pick one. Like, who picks one Christmas movie? But that's the question, so I have to give the answer. Okay. If you ask my wife, it's the Santa Claus, which I disagree on. If you ask my kids, it's the most recent animated version of The Grinch voiced by Benedict Cumberbatch.
Solid choice, though.
Very, very good. Very good movie, surprisingly. So, I'm going to give this answer, aren't I? Man, I don't care if you think it's a Christmas movie or not. I have to watch Die Hard every Christmas. Like, I just have to. It is a tradition for me. If I'm allowed to go top five, it's that. It is Christmas Vacation. The blessing. shoot, I'm on. Oh man, I can't even think of it. I'm also a grew up on the classics. So please give me the Rudolph, the stop motion version.
Okay. Okay.
That's my thing. I'm also a big Charlie Brown fan. So give me Charlie Brown Christmas, and I'll go with Elf. I'm just gonna ride with a very, very, anything that's very quotable is typically a good, good solid Christmas movie.
Solid list, solid choices.
The movie you were looking for is Muppet Christmas Carol.
Oh, thank you, God.
All timer. Sorry to ruin the harsher vibes, Philip. But on that note,
there it was.
It was right there for you. On that note, man, if folks want more of what you've got, other than the 1012 network, obviously we pub that on every podcast, but where can folks find all of your stuff on the internet?
I'm on Twitter at OKTXARPoke. There's a lot of OSU. There's a lot of random things. And then there's a lot of like nerdy stuff as well. I try to keep my anime off of Twitter. I don't know why, I just kind of do. I haven't found that particular audience yet. And I found that if I tweet about it, people are like, I don't respond, but it feels less like they ignore me and more like so that stays over there. So does the weird Lego stuff that I love. Although Instagram algorithm, Lego, 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 Lego. of course, 1012 Network, 1012network.com, TEN, number 12, the word network. You can find every show, every podcast like this one you are all enjoying. You can find every show for the Big 12. I know you're all leaving for the SEC. Don't worry, we're not going to boot Kyle or Gerald. I would never do that to them. They are, I would call them friends at this point.
Absolutely.
I think that's fair. The times, man, to have friends you've never met in person is a weird, weird thing, and also very normal.
Yeah,
it's the most like you could go to therapy or start a podcast. I'm like, this is my therapy. Okay, this is how I vent and talk to people and text Gerald about One Piece that I'm still not 200 episodes through, but working my way there.
It feels weird to only be like 10% through that show and have watched
it. And it had been so much.
So much has happened. Philip, before we go off on our anime tangent, man, thank you so much for joining us. And I don't want to say good luck on Saturday, but it feels selfish not to. So good luck on Saturday.
Good luck to you as well. Good luck to you. Luck all around.
Just luck.
Anyone. Yeah. to all your teams, all the teams out there whose players are all entering the transfer portal, including three Kansas State quarterbacks. It's okay. It's happening to everyone. It's not a big deal. It just is what it is. More will come.
Always great to have Philip on again, the pod father himself. Thank you for being here. But Kyle, I don't know if you remember this back to Tuesday's show, but I'm currently leading the Podstradamus up one at this point in the season. We normally end our Podstradamus picks there because Texas doesn't have as many games left to play, but I think we'll keep it running because Texas at least has this game and then a bowl game, or likely potentially a couple of extras depending on how things shake out this weekend. So Texas taking on Oklahoma State, it's time for Podstradamus. And remember, Podstradamus is brought to you by our friends over at Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the best legal way for you to play player props in states like California, Florida, and of course the great state of Texas. It's an easy way to play daily fantasy. You just pick 2 to 5 players on an over under for their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on an entry. It's just you versus the projections. They have a ton of stats to choose from in all sorts of sports. You can do mixed sports entries, whether it's football, college basketball. Baseball's not going anymore, but I think hockey's back up. I don't know what's going on right now, but you can mix it all across the board. And listeners to our show using the code Longhorn12 can get 100% of a deposit match up to $100 by using that code. So go on to prizepicks.com, grab that app from your app store of choice, whether it's Google Play or the Apple App Store, award-winning 4.8 stars rated in both of those app stores. Grab the app, use the code Longhorn12, get double your money, whether it's a dollar, whether it's $100, you should do it. Have some fun, have some extra fun, and always check out our friends over at Prize Pick. So Kyle, with all that out of the way, what is your first Podstradamus pick brought to you by Prize Picks?
As Philip said, it was already going to be my first of the bunch, but this is an Oklahoma State defense. This is a Jim Knowles-less defense as he made his way to Ohio State, though that didn't matter. That has some playmakers, but struggles with the big play. I'm defining here big plays, the easiest way to measure it, the same way Stats Broadcast does, which is a passing play of more than 15 or a running play of more than 10. Texas had 17 of those such plays against Texas Tech. I don't think it'll be quite so much, but I do think that Texas will have. Let's go for it, Gerald. You know, I'm down. Might as well just have fun with it. Texas will have eight. They will have more than eight. I talk myself out of it. They will have more than eight big plays, passes of more than 15, runs of more than 10, greater than eight.
Okay, I'll allow it. And I think this is one of those weeks where our Podstradamus picks are synergistic. Oklahoma State has shown a propensity to get pounded on the pavement, specifically against the run. They have not one, not two, not three, not four, but 5 games of giving up more than 200 yards on the ground, including 293 a few weeks ago against UCF. Now, I don't think Texas is going to touch 300 against Oklahoma State, but I do think Texas will hit 150 on the ground against Oklahoma State.
Greater 150 or greater on the ground. All right. For me, for my second, I think Texas is going to protect the ball. This is their ball. They're taking it with them to the playoffs. If they win this game, they're going to be locked in. This is the end of the redemption tour. This is the culmination of a season. If they play their game, they win. The way that they lose is by getting off schedule and by giving up the ball. I think they're going to hold on to that thing delicately, treat it like a precious, precious, valued good, and win the turnover battle.
Okay, winning the turnover battle. I like it. That's a dangerous one against Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State has done some damage in the turnovers.
20 takeaways.
20 takeaways this year. So I am, you know, it feels like a dance with the one that brung you kind of day. So Oklahoma State, honestly, their offensive line has done pretty solid against opponents, kind of keeping them out of the backfield. But I'm feeling froggy. Oklahoma State, in some of their worst games, has given up a big number of tackles for a loss. I'm going to go Texas has at least 5 tackles for loss in this game.
Texas, 6 or more TFLs. Okay. All right. I like it. It's written down. It's captured.
Love it. I think I said at least 5, but we'll let it ride because that's fine for you. So we'll be back.
Sorry, I did intentionally try to push that one because you have a lead, fine. And I hate it. You want to go with 5?
No, we go with 6. We'll let it rock with 6. Yeah. I'll let you goad me into that. We'll do it with 6.
Love it.
We'll let it. We'll, this. You know how my brain's weird? Because that led me to Old School, when they convince Will Ferrell to do one beer bong. He'll do one. He's going to do one.
Right.
That's
right,
where my brain right, went. Right. But that's we'll fair. Be back on Tuesday, hopefully celebrating a Big 12 championship and potentially a berth in the college football playoff. We'll have all that news for you coming up soon.
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. We'll move quickly around the country. College football, it's getting to silly season. Carousel in full swing. Playoff matchups teasing, mostly. Not really locking in, but teasing, looking close, making good football watching. A crazy afternoon on Saturday. Good games, bad games, it's all happening right now. This is a fun time. I love the last week of the season, the rivalry week heading into the postseason. When you're in it, it feels great. A team that's not in it, not in the postseason as it stands for Conference Championship Week, however, is OU. Was there a more painful, like, series of, I don't know, two full 48 hours of football watching than OU having to watch Texas stomp somebody, them kind of stomp somebody, still give up 45 points, and then everything that happened with the way that Oklahoma State game played out? Like, can you imagine something being more painful?
I remember I was driving, so I was listening to the game, and when that extra point was blocked to give BYU a shot to tie the game with a field goal, it's like, Oklahoma State's going to lose this game. Like, I knew it. I just knew it was going to happen, and they didn't, right? It was just the weirdest. But I'm fine with giving Sooners palpitations in that one, especially because Texas doesn't have to play them. There's a lot of conversation to be had about, like, if Texas would rather avenge the loss for CFP, but, like, hold, you know, it's fine. You just sit at home. Texas will win the trophy. We'll take it to the SEC with us. We'll do all the hard work.
I like it better that OU just doesn't even get to be there. They have no control, nothing to do. Oklahoma State was getting boat raced. They were celebrating. OU fans were already prepping their game plans for how they were going to tweet to beat Texas. And they get no chance. They can watch their two most hated rivals on Saturday. And you know they'll be watching. Speaking of people who hate us, I guess I don't want to say hated rivals, but if there was anything funnier than thinking of Oklahoma fans watching the end of that Oklahoma State game, it may have been the entire college football world for about an hour zooming in, lifting up the rock and seeing the roaches scurry when Tex Aggs ruled the world for a moment. They ruled the entire college football internet for one moment when they did, I don't know if it's the dumbest thing, but it is the most Tex Aggs thing. Gerald, break down the Texas A&M coaching search.
I mean, it's pretty simple. They couldn't find anybody they wanted. They offered the job to Mark Stoops for apparently what was a ridiculous amount of money, repeating some of the previous contract issues. That got shut down and shouted down like, I don't know, my three-year-old when I try to make him eat a vegetable. And so then the likeliest candidate, the one that they probably should have offered it to first, Mike Elko over at Duke, who categorically said he was not going to take the job a few weeks ago, or I guess a week ago, is now, you know, on a private jet to College Station. And he's going to be the coach.
It's beautiful to think about, just like we got to get a head coach from a blue basketball school. And maybe people thought they were talking about Elko all along. Bjork's buddy, Stoops, getting the call, which again, just the oh, it's going to be Dabo. Oh, Urban Meyer's coming out of retirement. Oh, Ryan Day, of course. Dan Lanning, like the names that they started with. And look, we know that, you know, there were a contingent of Texas fans who were sure Nick Saban was coming to Texas. I get it. I get how it goes. But it's just, I don't know, it's funny. Elko kind of is the sensible hire, so good on them for tripping and stumbling into it on accident. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. It is interesting now that the flagship program of the state of Texas and its, you know, second biggest and historically most successful team, UT and A&M, are currently have a California kid who played quarterback at BYU as the head coach of one, and a New Jersey kid who played quarterback at Penn as the head coach of the other. Like, it's just, it's not quite textbook, but we'll see how the next few years play out.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I mean, I think with Holgorsen gone, that opens up another, like, Jeff Traylor potential landing spot. Dave Aranda is going to be back at Baylor for another year, but his coordinators are likely gone. Jeff Lebby continues to fail forward with just the aplomb of people of his ilk, just a terrible, terrible human being finding a way to fail forward. Now the head coach at Mississippi State, Lane Kiffin, already subtweeting at him, which I love. Just a weird coaching carousel overall.
I'm already a huge fan of Lane Kiffin's Twitter game, but I will be rooting vociferously for Lane and Ole Miss during that Egg Bowl. Every year, it looks like A&M is going to be on Saturday, so Egg Bowl may still be the only game on Thursday. Won't compete with UTA and M if the game stays not on Thanksgiving Day, but they will be the same week. So it'll be a Thursday game to watch and to give another reason to root for old Lane there. Gerald, Big 12 awards, Big 12 team of the season all came out on Wednesday evening. We could run through what we actually saw. There's a lot of Longhorns on the award list, rightfully so. OU shut out completely out of the, or on the both teams, OU shut completely out of the awards list. Texas rightfully dominated there. Like to see both of that. First team players, wide receiver Xavier Worthy, tight end Jatavion Sanders, offensive lineman Calvin Banks, kicker Bert Auburn, kick returner, punt returner Xavier Worthy, defensive line Byron Murphy, defensive line Tavondre Sweat, linebacker Jalen Ford. The second team was made up of running back Jonathan Brooks, feels tough, but injury, I guess, and some really, really good running backs in the Big 12 this year. The top end, wide receiver Adonai Mitchell, and defensive back Jahdae Barron. Gerald, where do you want to start there with what do you like? What do you feel, Texas, or who got snubbed?
It's hard for me to identify like who got snubbed. I'm glad that Jahdae Barron got his name on the list. Second team feels, you know, a little dicey, but you know, it's fine. Texas not having a defensive back on the first team feels simultaneously appropriate and inappropriate as we talk about it. You know, T-Sweat being a unanimous selection, T-Sweat being defensive player of the year, right? Like, a lot of it makes sense. There was a lot of outrage about Mike Gundy being the coach of the year rather than Steve Sarkisian. But like people thought Texas was going to be good this year. It's like, that's not a surprise to the people that voted in this poll, right? Like, I think the one that has a legitimate beef is probably like Neil Brown, because Neil Brown was picked to finish last. I think right behind Oklahoma State, and you know, people thought Neil Brown was going to be fired, you know, 8 weeks ago, and they're bowl eligible and, you know, we're relevant late into the season. So I think that's something that's probably the one that I feel like is more questionable than anything. I have feelings about the punter situation, and the kicker situation is probably where I feel issues. You know, Bert Auburn was the first team kicker, but getting snub for Austin McNamara feels interesting for special teams player of the year. That's fine. But I mean, Texas looked good. They won all the awards. I think that makes sense for them to win.
Yeah, it does. It's probably not fair to Bert, who has the most field goal attempts in the nation, has you know, we talked about all his records that he set, but don't forget this week, Alex Hale, the kicker for the Big 12 opponent on Saturday, has the second most field goals in the nation, field goal attempts one versus field goal attempts two. No, for me, right, it was great to see Adonai Mitchell get the newcomer of the year. Love seeing Ant Hill get the Big 12 freshman defensive player of the year, I guess technically, but still nonetheless great. Baxter, I think, you know, it's fair. If he gets a couple more carries, you know, he had the talent to get a Big 12 freshman, but that's fine. I have no issue there. Sark not winning, you know, it's, if you go by the logic of this is what Texas should be, I get it. They have all the players, whatever. This is, you know, where they were predicted, but it is year three and he got them there after what felt like, you know, a decade in the wilderness. I believe he missed out on a 50K bonus by not being named the Big 12 coach of the year. So I hope some, you know, booster just to slaps that on his doorstep as a thank you. Sark, I think he gets a $100,000 bonus for making a conference title game and additional $100,000 if they win. So he's doing okay. I'm not super coming worried about him.
I wonder what the CFP bonus is. That's something to look into this week before.
Yeah,
I might
have to see if we could figure that out. I will say just two final things here. Big ups to Bo Davis, right? Development. 2 3-stars, 1. Basically, they split. Defensive lineman didn't go to Sweat because it went to Murphy because Sweat won defensive player. But, you know, the two biggest awards that he could get, Bo Davis coached 2 3-stars into winning those two awards, including the biggest one defensive player of the year. So just incredible. This is, you know, culture in this team. It started with the Bo Davis rant we talked about at the Iowa State game. Then you see it, you know, in this this outcome of this year. So love seeing that for Bo, for the players. And the final thing, you mentioned Jahdae Barron getting snubbed. These are the stats that he leads all Big 12 DBs in. Yards per coverage snap with 0.2 yards per coverage snap. Defensive stops while in coverage at 17. Touchdowns allowed, 0. That's pretty much the quintessential, like,
second team numbers best. Right there. Second team numbers for
you're
sure.
The best cover guy by all of those. And tackler of people when they, you know, you're in coverage and they get the ball somehow. The best immediate stopper. So you are literally everything that you're looking for in a defensive back. And probably, honestly, the past 2 years, he was the best defensive back in the conference. And that's not an exaggeration. So I do feel for Jahdae. I hope, I know that the real heads, the NFL draft scouts aren't swayed by this, and he'll end up surprising people when he goes so high. They'll say, huh, second team Big 12 guy went in the, you know, middle of the, or, you know, end of the second round, middle of the third round. We'll say, yeah, you know, and he probably could have gone higher. So go prove him wrong, Jahdae. You're beloved on this podcast.
Shouts to Kelvin Banks for getting honorable mentions for lineman of the year. Jonathan Brooks for offensive player of the year came up in the honorable mentions there as well. Got to shout those out before we go.
Gerald, so we've beat around kind of the beating heart of Texas Twitter. Yes, we want to win. Hopefully the entire team and everyone is focused on winning this weekend. That's the big one. Anything that you want starts with get the last Big 12 championship, just like we drew it up at the beginning of the season. But there are goals beyond that, Gerald. Break down a little bit for us how Texas, with a win, we're assuming, gets into the playoffs.
I mean, the biggest thing, obviously, like you said, is Texas winning. I think Louisville upsetting Florida State is probably the biggest door opener. I think that allows, because I think the Pac-12 champion is going to get in. I think the Big 10 champion, which is going to be Michigan. There's no way on God's green earth that Iowa wins that game. That Michigan, I think it's like whoever wins the Pac-12, Michigan, whoever wins the SEC is going to be in. And so that fourth spot, I think Florida State losing to Louisville opens that door for Texas and gives them a legit opportunity, obviously, because that means that, you know, I think if Georgia wins, then obviously Alabama has 2 losses. It gets a little bit dicier if Alabama wins that game. But I think overall, like, Louisville is the first domino that Texas fans need to worry about. And then really, if everything else goes chalk and Louisville pulls off the upset, then I think Texas is it.
What's the Krillin Dragon Ball Z move that he teaches Goku, where everyone puts their energy into the one
spirit
blast?
Bomb.
Yes, the spirit bomb. That's right. This week, Krillin is University of Louisville, and all Texas fans are sending our spirit to the spirit bomb. See, Philip, I can do anime too. But yes, we are all channeling Lamar Jackson. We are all calling on the ghost of Charlie Strong. We are all calling on Jeff Brom in two ways. we are all calling on the cards. This is the one. We need it. Boy, do we need it. It was a terrible experience. I tweeted it. A good friend of the show, Ryan Nanny, who's been on here, and Spencer Hall, and let them know that just the one day, one afternoon of being a Florida fan while rooting for them to do the job against Florida State was soul-wrecking. And I loved that Ryan Nanny's response was, I don't know, I'm watching Farmageddon. But yes, it was difficult, but they could have done us a favor last week. Now it all comes down to Louisville. And as long as Louisville does what they need to do, this is it. This is how it plays out. But first, as we said, win the game. Gerald, I just wanted to, last thing before we close up this college football section. Do you think 5 years from now, when you're looking for an OU did something very stupid gif Are you more likely to search for the Sooner Schooner or the OU Little Giants stumble through the smoke as they tried to make their entrance this week?
Art Browse on the sideline with Jeff Lebby.
Okay, fair enough. I like it. I like it. All right. Speaking of guys who, guys who couldn't and never will and never should be in the NFL, but there are many Longhorns who have made it to the NFL. We have one who stands out. There's some great ones, but one who stands out this week because he probably lifted your fantasy football teams. Gerald, who's your Longhorn in the NFL of the week? I think we share one this week.
Bijan, hooray! 19 touchdowns
would be a game.
Incredible. The 19 touches, 123 total yards, and two scores. Big ups to the man.
Big ups to Bijan coming through in the clutch fantasy football, the meaty dark days of your fantasy football season. And Gerald, one more, I guess I mixed these up. I should have put this before we closed out college football. It is portal season officially Monday. You're listening to this on Thursday. We have a game Saturday. And all the postseason stuff will be on the table, but the portal will be opening, and that is very much a key part of the college football calendar now. It just is. What positions, what are you looking for Texas? We don't have to go super in depth. You know, there will be many players hitting, and we can break this down as the news breaks. But if it's just you, you know, finger in the air, which way is the wind blowing? What do you think Texas is looking for in the portal when it opens on Monday?
I think Texas is, much like last year, in a really advantageous position because they kind of don't have like glaring needs. I think there's opportunity for depth, but like they don't need, like, you know, we talk about adding from the portals, like, do you raise the ceiling or raise the floor? And I think a lot of this is like raising the floor for Texas. Like, I think they could probably grab a wide receiver. I think they could probably grab a tight end. I think interior defensive line, depending on Byron Murphy, he's probably gone, but like, what does that room look like? Safety, again, depending, like, Jalen Catalon didn't walk for senior day, so I don't know what that means for him. I think there's potentially a linebacker, but again, I think Texas has the opportunity to be pretty selective. Like, there's not any really glaring holes, but I think if they're like ones that I have to like say, probably interior defensive line, linebacker probably could use one, maybe a tight end, but again, not a ton of like massive glaring issues.
Yeah, the nice thing is they're set in the quarterback room, which, you know, that's maybe the most prolific portal, but it's also maybe the hardest to get it right, to land it. And also offensive line, you just don't see a ton of really good offensive line, like every once in a while, you know, maybe one a year, two a year, who really are true impact. So it's great that Texas is building that organically, and that's not really an area they have to look. Defensive line, again, you see some more there. Texas, a lot of it also depends, and I've always said this, I think the biggest recruiting wins are oftentimes, and this is the way your offseason started on NCAA 14 till we get another video game, it's still my point of reference. You first start spending your recruiting points on recruiting your own team to come back. So a lot of what Texas looks for in the portal will be, who can those coaches, who can be quite persuasive, talk into coming back for another year, for sticking around, especially with the COVID year giving what seems like everyone just infinite years until you decide that you're done. There's a lot of guys who you think might be done who might still have a little bit of something to say once we get done. Texas does have the advantage, right? They'll be in the playoffs, so they can see whatever. No one's really going to jump in the portal, I don't think, during a playoff run if everything goes the way we just described it in the last segment. But if they are doing that, no one's jumping out, but there will be guys jumping in. So they kind of get the chance to let the portal, you know, beef up, and then they can come in and see what lays before them before they have to decide what their own team looks like. So portal season, always exciting. Texas, I think, will be a very hot destination after what they finally did this year and all the natural recruiting advantages. So, Gerald, that's it for Burn Orange Lenses. Let's go to our final segment, Godzillatron. What have you been watching on your giant screen?
Yeah, I didn't watch a ton, didn't do a ton of streaming. We are firmly in Christmas movie season, so we've already done Elf. We've already done the Rankin Bass, Frosty the Snowman. We did Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Muppet Christmas Carol has already been multiple times. So that's like your normal stuff. We did a road trip to Oklahoma to visit my in-laws for Thanksgiving last week. And so I'm an audiobook when I drive kind of guy. There's a book called Legendborn, which is, it is, you know, firmly in that like young adult fantasy area, but it's not, thankfully, it's more along the lines of like Hunger Games, good young adult like situation, not like a lot of the dribble that they're putting out. But it's essentially about a girl who is kind of pulled into secret societies at the University of North Carolina specifically, and kind of the things that go into, I'm going to say the things that go into the American legacies and the Eurocentric legacies that we built a lot of our institutions on that maybe are not necessarily completely true to the truth. If you are not cool with confronting like some of the uglier parts of American history, skip this one. But it's really good. It's a really fun fantasy book. It takes a bit to get going. I did the audiobook. It took like a third of the book for like them to get through like the exposition. And then once it started, it really got really good. So if you're into like Arthurian legends and stuff like that, like check it out.
I like it. I like that recommendation. Gerald, it is Christmas movie season. We started with one of my wife's favorites, wife and I's favorites, I should say. The Holiday, which just makes me feel good.
So good. So good.
Every time that old man Arthur gets up and walks on that stage, just it gets a bit misty. Also, if you remember, that Eli Wallach is his name, that actor. He also was in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He's been doing this a long time. But we watched that. We also
Jack
watched
Black as a romantic lead, baby.
It works. It works. Give him the goofy romantic, you know, lead, and he can do it. He can pull that off. Four Christmases we also watched, which is spectacular, mainly for Tim McGraw and Jon Favreau as Vince Vaughn's brothers in their performance. Just as amateur cage fighters, not UFC, just in people's backyards, as they say. But yeah, so we hit up, we went kind of light and sweet and also funny. So we haven't gotten into the deep oeuvre of Christmas movies yet, the classics or anything, but these are two modern classics that we enjoyed. And then, Gerald, I've realized lately, I'm not going to fight it anymore. And again, this is something my wife pointed out, and I realize it applies to me as well. I am a mark for a classic whodunit. I just am.
Yes.
You know, I thought, yeah, Knives Out because it's especially good, or you know, right? They've had some great whodunits, but I've learned I will watch just about any whodunit and love it. We watched Murder on the Orient Express, which is not something we'd ever seen before. Was familiar, obviously, with the concept and the book, but. I don't think it's a particularly well-reviewed film. Like, I don't think it won any awards. I don't think it's going to have a 7 to 8 plus IMDb score, and that's okay. It's shot pretty much exclusively in like one scene on a couple train cars, in a few exotic and interesting looking train stations along the way. But it is, maybe I just like movies on trains that involve snow, Snowpiercer. We'll get back to that one. But it involves, you know, every actor who you've ever heard of. Like, the cast is ridiculous. Kenneth Branagh, Dame Judi Dench, Johnny Depp, Michelle Pfeiffer, Penelope Cruz, Josh Gad is great. Willem Dafoe coming in strong, Leslie Odom Jr. It's a strong cast at the top. And it's, you know, a murder that wraps up nicely in the end when you figure out what actually happened. I won't ruin, because the whole point of a whodunit is who actually done it. But it's worth a watch if you, like me, find yourself enjoying those types of films. A little mystery, just fun, easy, like unproblematic watching. Like, it's just like, ah, look at this. People set usually in another time when train travel or some, you know, thing that didn't involve cell phones was around and allowed mystery to abound.
I mean, Kenneth Branagh doing Hercule Poirot is going to be pretty solid. Like, I love Kenneth Branagh. It's Agatha Christie, right? They've done two sequels to it already, or two of the other Agatha Christie books.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it's good. I haven't seen it. It's on that list of, like, I want to watch this, but also it's one that I have to sit down and actually watch. Mm-hmm. But so it hasn't, like, ever happened. Haunting in Venice actually looked really good. The one that they just did this year that I haven't had a chance to watch either. But that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
You can find me on the socials at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back on Tuesday, breaking down the Big 12 championship game, how Texas fared, hopefully talking about a win. And then we'll actually, again, this time next week, have a bowl game selection and or a college football selection to talk about. So we'll be back next weekend as well. Thanks so much for tuning in again. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. It's a month after Halloween. Put away those Halloween costumes.